Good afternoon and welcome to House Labor and Commerce. It is 3:24 p.m. Friday, March 30th. Members present are Representative Stutes, Representative Birch, Representative Wool, myself, Chair Keto. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Representative Sullivan, Leonard, and Knopp are excused, and Representative Josephson is in another committee for a hearing, but we can still get to work. Susie Edwardson is our recording secretary. Cody Grusendorf, our LIO moderator. Today we have Senate Bill 15, e-cigs, tobacco, nicotine, minor sales, second hearing. Senate Bill 165, comprehensive health insurance fund, second hearing. Senate Bill 45, exemption of licensing contractors, second hearing. House Bill 384, Regulatory Commission of Alaska Broadband Internet, first hearing. And House Bill 230, telecommunications internet privacy, and that is also a second hearing. So to kick us off, we have Senate Bill 15. If we can have Mr. Lampkin come forward. And Mr. Lampkin, last meeting you gave us a presentation. Did you have anything else you want to add to your presentation before Labor and Commerce? I guess put your name and affiliation on the record before we get started.
For the record, Mr. Chairman Keo, my name is Tim Lampkin, staff at Senator Stevens. I'm here to answer questions and continue the hearing at your pleasure. We could go over the sectional if you wish, but in the interest of time and the other bills on your docket, it's, of course, totally your prerogative.
I think unless we've got an interest in doing something like that, I think we pretty well understand what was going on, and I don't believe that I need to see anything more. So we still have public testimony open. And let me check to see if we've got anybody else signed up. Okay, and we do have Katie Stephens. Ms. Stephens, if you can place your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with your testimony, please.
Hello, my name is Katie Stephens, and I am representing myself here.
Ms. Stephens, and if you could speak a little bit louder, we're having a little trouble hearing you.
Sure, can you hear me?
A little bit louder, maybe closer to the microphone.
My name is Katie Stephens, and I'm representing myself here in Anchorage. And I am speaking in support of SB 15. I believe that this is a great bill. Restrictions and penalties on the sales of e-cigarettes to minors should match those of the standard tobacco products in Alaska. And the aerosols from these products can really affect brain development in youth, and I'm not sure if you know much about particulate matter that are coming from these products, but this is PM 2.5 microns is 24 times smaller than one strand of human hair. So for a little experiment, if you just grab one piece of hair, that is 60 microns. So 24 times less than that is these fine particulate matters that people are breathing in and breathing out from secondhand aerosols. So I think it's important to keep this out of the reach of youth, and I hope this bill gets passed through. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stephens. Do we have any questions from committee members? Seeing none, have a question from Representative?
Not for her.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Ms. Stephens, for your testimony. We do have, Shelley Grigsby, Tobacco Control Program, online for questions. Joe Darnell, Division of Behavioral Health, online for questions. Greg Francois, Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing. Looks like we also have Emily Neenan with the American Cancer Society online for questions. And Representative Wool, do you have a person to direct a question to?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this would go towards Joe Darnell. My first person to ask, and we touched upon this the other day, as far as giving citations, whatever the fine is for minors that possess tobacco or vape e-cigarette products, and I think I was told there wasn't many given out, and that really isn't the thrust of the program. We're really going after the vendors. Does anyone have the numbers to how many tickets are given out to kids that have tobacco or e-cig products on them, say in schools or wherever? Do you have a stat on that?
Mr. Darnell, if you can place your name and affiliation on the record, and if you've got an answer to that question, or we can have it repeated.
Joe Darnell, Division of Behavioral Health, Tobacco Enforcement, through the chair. I don't have that information. I do know that most, when it comes to citing underage individuals for having tobacco on it, it's usually a uniformed police officer that does it, and it rarely happens. But I don't have an exact number on it. And as it is now, they can't cite for the vape products. That's, I believe, what this bill is trying to tighten up.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Any other questions?
No, thank you.
Seeing no other questions, and I don't have anyone else signed up for public testimony, I will close public testimony at 3:30 p.m. That brings the bill back before us. Do we have any comments on Senate Bill 15? Seeing no comments, Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move CS for SB 15 version 30-LS0170/I be passed from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Do we have any objections to the motion as stated? Seeing none, House Senate Bill 15 has passed from House Labor and Commerce. We will take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. Thank you. 32 p.m. in House Labor and Commerce. The next bill up before us is Senate Bill 165. Ms. Kramer, if you can come forward. Place your name and affiliation on the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Laura Kramer, and I am staff to Senator Anna McKinnon. And I'm happy to do a run through of the bill if you guys need a refresher or answer any questions you may have.
I think we've seen it recently enough, so I don't know if anybody needs a recap of the bill. So I do think that just have you here for questions. Do we have anybody that has questions on Senate Bill 165, Comprehensive Health Insurance Fund? Seeing no questions, public testimony is still open. And I do not have anybody else signed up for public testimony, so I'll close public testimony this time at 3:33 p.m. That brings the bill back before us. We also have Ms. Wing-Heyer available for questions from the department. Do we have any questions for the department? Seeing none, we will bring the bill back before us. Do we have any comments or questions on the bill before us? Seeing none, Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move SB 165 version 30-LS1320/D be passed from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Any objections to the motion as stated? Seeing none, Senate Bill 165 has passed from House Labor and Commerce, and we'll take a brief at ease to sign our paperwork. Bill we have coming before the committee is Senate Bill 45. If we can have Ms. McClanahan come forward. Place your name and affiliation on the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Natasha McClanahan, staff to Senator Costello. Thank you for hearing Senate Bill 45 today, and I'm happy to provide a brief recap of the bill or walk through the sectional if you guys need. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Natasha. And we did just hear the bill this week. I don't believe we need to have a recap unless somebody requests. I'm not seeing that. We also have the department available for questions, and we have public testimony open. Let me check to see who we've got for public testimony. And we do have Mr. James Squires. Mr. Squires, if you can place your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is James Squires. I live in rural Deltona. I submitted written testimony last year, which was suppressed from the record, which this chair was kind enough to include, and I hope you folks have had a chance to read it. Earlier versions of this bill have been submitted in the 28th, 29th, and now 30th legislature. If it were a great bill, it would have already passed. The contractor lobby continues to push this bill because of the problems they are experiencing in the more populated in organized areas of the state, which is best handled at the borough or the MOA level. Liberty Bite on this piece of legislation is requiring a form to be completed when Alaskans sell a home they build within 2 years of beginning construction. No one has taken into account the guy who built the cabin in Tok, Eagle, Circle, or Nalato, who has no idea this requirement is in place and would now run afoul of the law. Testimony in the past and other committees kind of gets the response from the Department of Commerce that they will not really be enforcing it in situations like that. This is because they know that they want to crack down on some examples that are before them in the more populated areas. Therein lies the trap. You simply cannot inform law-abiding Alaskans in the far corners of the state without the Department of Commerce starting some kind of educational campaign, which would require a fiscal note. They are staying at zero because they're going to only look at what is submitted. This bill will turn certain law-abiding Alaskans into outlaws. At the very least, you should send this over to the Finance Committee. Speaking of outlaws, it's my belief, based upon involvement and research, that this bill was introduced in violation of Alaska Statute 2408060, Introduction of Bills A, which states a member of the legislature or a committee chairman, with the concurrence of a majority of the active members of the committee, and on behalf of the committee may introduce a bill or resolution. I know this to be true because this is a committee-sponsored bill, and I do not believe there is concurrence of the majority. I go into greater detail in my previous written testimony, which I encourage you to read. It is apparent there is a defect in the introduction of this bill, so it should be set aside with another properly introduced one if somebody is willing to take the heat to sponsor that bill. I find it amazing the traction the bill gets once it's breathed life. This bill left its first committee with only one due pass and the rest were no recommendations due to, I feel, the poor merits of the bill and the black cloud on the introduction. My name is James Squires, and that concludes my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Squires. Do we have any questions from committee? CEO, Representative Wool.
Well, I think my question might be for the bill sponsor in relation to something that Mr. Squires said, so.
Okay. Thank you. And thank you for your testimony, Mr. Squires. And if we have Ms. McClanahan, and then go ahead, Mr. Representative.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. this he made mention of this bill being around for several iterations over several years. It's my understanding that there's been some changes over the years. And was there other requirements that were previously on the bill that aren't on the bill now, or do you know?
Yes, but I don't have the history with me, and I can provide that to you after committee if you'd prefer.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we've got a question from Representative Stoops.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. So all this does is require the individual who built the home within, if they sell it within 2 years, to tell the potential buyer, I built this myself, correct? And provide information to the Department of Commerce.
Through the chair, yes, that is correct.
I guess my question is, why the limit of 2 years?
And I can actually answer that a little bit because of the discussions we've had in this committee on similar measures in the past. And the 2 years is a reasonable amount of time that it was believed that an individual could build a property or build a second property and then maintain it for personal use. And the comment was made that if you are building and selling a property within a two-year time or multiple properties within a two-year time frame, then you are in a situation of competing with the licensed contractors, and that is why the 2 years was chosen in the original piece of legislation. Does that help?
Yes. May I have a follow-up, please?
Sure.
Thank you. So this does not preclude the builder from getting any of the necessary and appropriate permits that are required by a contractor during the building of the home then. Is that correct?
Through the chair, it's just if you're an owner builder and not licensed as a contractor, and then you have to provide notification to the department if you sell your home within 2 years of building.
So, follow up. It does not preclude the individual that's building the home from getting all the required permits that would be required by a contractor if he were building the home. Is that correct?
Through the chair, I believe not, but the department is here as well, and they can answer that question.
Great.
And Representative Stutz, the bill does absolutely not preclude a local jurisdiction from enforcing or requiring building codes and permits for their residences.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think it reminded me, and maybe for the caller, Mr. Squires, that I believe in earlier iterations there was a requirement if you were to build in less than 2 years to get a contractor's license, and that's been removed, I think. But I don't want to speak out of turn.
Through the chair, now that requirement is not in this legislation.
Correct. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for bill sponsor? Seeing none, I do have one other individual who's signed up for public testimony, although Mr. Dalton, we've actually heard from Mr. Dalton before. He's on the record. So with no others for public testimony, I will close public testimony on Senate Bill 45 at 3:43 p.m. And that brings the bill back before the committee. Do we have any comments on Senate Bill 45? Seeing none, Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move SB 45 version 30-LS0321/O be passed from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
And do we have any objections to the motion as stated? Seeing none, Senate Bill 45 has passed from House Labor and Commerce, and we will take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. Thank you. Welcome back. It is 3:45 p.m. We are back on the record in House Labor and Commerce, and we now have House Bill 384 before the committee. We can have Representative Guttenberg and his staff, Seth Witten, come forward, place your names and affiliations on the record, and provide us with your presentation, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and gentlemen, and it's a beautiful Friday afternoon here in Juneau. House Bill 384, for me, is a representation of a conflict that simply needs to be remediated or corrected. You know, I've been talking broadband for a long time, and part of my frustration is finding the entity in the state that's responsible for it. In statute, in May, in 45059913 defies telecommunications. This is in the enabling legislation. It defines, if I may, Mr. Chair, read telecommunications as the transmission and reception of messages, impressions, pictures, and signal by means of electricity, electromagnetic waves, and any kind of energy, force, variations, and impulses, whether conveyed by cable, wire, radiation through space, or transmitted through other media within a designated area or between designated points. I would imagine that would cover broadband, internet, cable, all of those things. But the RCA says it doesn't. In your packet is a letter from our legal department that says it does. The RCA says, no, they don't have the authority. In both of the opposition letters from the ATA and ACS, they say it's not necessary because they can do these things, the things that are not precluded by the FCC. The FCC maintains, that's the Federal Election Commission, maintains that they have exclusive jurisdiction over this, except for, and if I might read their order here, nor do we deprive the states of any function expressly reserved to them under this act, such as responsibility for designating eligible communication carriers. Now, that's very important to the carriers because that is the process that allows them to receive universal service money, which is under the what's known as the Alaska Plan, is about $1.3 billion for 10 years from the start of the adoption of the Alaska Plan. And they go on to say they fully expect the states will continue to play a vital role in protecting consumers from fraud, enforcing fair business practices, for example, in advertising billings, generally responding to consumer inquiries and complaints. Further says, it goes on that even though the FCC takes the responsibility on themselves, to deal with them, and in their order, they're in the internet neutrality order, they're moving to a hands-off. It still recognizes that the state has a responsibility. The problem is the RCA says they don't. And I think somebody in the state should. And when I've gone through my all of machinations of trying to find out who's responsible for broadband in the state, where do we find out who has coverage, what the rates are, how do we compare things, can we promote competition and do the things that need to be done for the consumers in the state, there's no place to go. And I come back to the enabling statute, which says the RCA does this, and the RCA says they don't. And that, and our lawyers say, legislative lawyers say that they do. I've been in front of the RCA and had these comments and had this dialogue, and they are in a place where they cannot establish amongst themselves what it is and whether they have the jurisdiction or not. So I have put the language into the bill that simply says broadband internet access. If the RCA says that they accept the fact that they have it, the bill is not necessary. Problem is, they don't, and nobody has any jurisdiction in the state for consumer affairs, for billing problems, for doing the mapping, for doing if there's anything that the state can do to enhance competition to grow out into rural Alaska or to those places, or my district. My district has a in my geographic area, and it's not limited to my district, has significant issues with lack of broadband or no broadband, or the performance of broadband significantly below the advertised rates, the advertised speeds, and availability. Now, there's some intent language in the legislature this year in our budget that talks about mapping, and that's a major problem, because if you go to the entity that says that they map, and that's the FCC, you will notice that almost the entire rail belt is rated at a really high speed, and we know they don't have it. They simply don't have it. And one of the reasons why the maps are so inaccurate is the fact that if a fiber optics cable crosses a corner of the way that the FCC maps, and that is a census block, then everybody in that region is considered to have that speed. And the fact is that it's possible that nobody has that speed. Consumers are looking for answers. The FCC is saying they don't have responsibility of any kind. The industry certainly likes the fact that they can do help them with the eligibility for universal service funds, but they're not accepting responsibility, so nobody has responsibility. When I go to the Commissioner of Administration and I say, what are you doing to increase the access on the state's broadband, they say, well, that's not our role. And I argue that it is their role to supply the state, make sure that the state has its own system in place to deliver services for ourselves that the carriers aren't doing. The state's not going to do it, but they can do specifications that are out there that they could tell a carrier this is something that we need out there, but they're not doing that either. So there's nobody building out an infrastructure for the general good of the state. The RCA hasn't accepted responsibility for it. And I just decided it was time to put it in statute, and who the natural people to have the responsibility is the RCA. And I would like to have a discussion with them for them to tell me why not.
Representative Birch has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't support this bill, and one of the concerns I have is, we just had this discussion last year about Uber and how it's really challenging when you start slicing and dicing the state into small, balkanizing, if you will, the state into small pieces. I am confident that this remains a federal issue. In a federal issue in the context of of, you know, the international or the highway system that was built across in the lower 48 between states. Every state can have something a little different, but if they want to have an interstate highway system, it's all going to be spec'd the same across all the states. And I kind of see this in a similar light, functionally and management wise. It seems to me like the broadband and the dramatic improvements that we have. And how do you see this as being necessary when you do have a federal entity involved? I know it's in play right now in D.C., but isn't this really kind of slicing off a small piece of this when we ought to be looking to our federal colleagues, if you will, to come up with an answer so you have some conformity across state boundaries from state to state? Through the chair.
If I will, Mr. Chair, it's a good question. It's very relevant. The FCC has said they have exclusive remedy to regulate, and they have said they're going to leave it open to the process, let the process work itself forward. So the state does not have the ability, even with this, the state would not have the ability to regulate it like a utility. They couldn't regulate the charges or the speeds but there are things left for the state to do that they could do. And one of the things that I'm really interested in is mapping. Give consumers information. You open the paper and there's plans available, but we didn't distribute it. But I see this all the time where people say, I bought a high-speed plan and I don't get it, right? Where do I go? Where's my consumer protection here? There's nobody else. The federal highway internet is the federal highway system and rural electrification all rolled into one, right? You cannot move into tomorrow. The FCC is not going to be able to regulate regardless because the FCC says you can't, right? But there are things left that have fallen off or cut or the wedge that has splintered off that the FCC doesn't do that somebody has to do in the state to look after the public purpose, to promote competition, to if there are people that are not receiving that have consumer issues, right? There's no place to go. There's no place to coordinate or one page to go where to see who supplies a service. There's nothing in the state. It's void, right? You can open up the paper and you can see different ISPs, AT&T, GCI, ACS, HughesNet, advertise. But many people who don't have it now, those things aren't available to them. And if they are, they don't get the speeds that are advertised that they're paying the price for. And the consumers need an avenue, and the FCC isn't it. Right, that is all far away in D.C., and they're taking hands off what's left in their order, saying that's up to the states. That's the only thing the state's going to do. We're going to be able to decide when you get off the interstate, there's a gas station there, right? There's a hotel there. We need a hotel. We need a gas station at every exit. I'm not even sure they're going to be able to say that, but they're going to say, if you're a consumer, here's what's available for you. It is outside of some of the denser rural areas, there are things available, but as soon as you move away, services drop to a point where you are, by the state not doing things, you are depriving people of basic services, right? Like, you go out the highway and you can't use the highway, right? It doesn't matter, you have a car, you have a computer, you can't get on the highway. That's my interest. As far as who becomes the carrier, I don't care. I don't care. One, I am completely neutral on who the carrier is on any of this stuff. I just think Alaskans have to have it. The FCC has a hands-off position. The state has nobody that picks up the pieces and says, we can increase competition and have something better for the public, sometimes simply by providing information. Or where's a complaint coming in? Because fraud is listed in here that some of the things the state has. I don't think any of these businesses are doing anything illegal. They're doing things in the best interest of their business plan. The state has nobody looking after itself, and I think the RCA simply is the right place for that to be. Otherwise, who would it be?
Thank you.
Representative Stutes has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a little confused on all of this stuff, but doesn't this somewhat mirror the net neutrality bill that we heard?
Not at all.
Oh, okay.
Not at all. Right. So the net
briefly, okay. Can you get the net in two sentences
net neutrality
the difference
allows on the so if you can't if you don't have broadband net
That's
neutrality
one.
Isn't an issue. I'm trying to make sure more people have internet. Net neutrality is if you have internet, somebody's controlling the speed.
Okay.
I'm trying to make sure you have internet.
Thank you for that.
Okay, thank you. I do. Representative Wolk, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it seems to me, Representative Guttenberg, that by this definition that is stated in statute, it's almost as if it was written about the internet. And anyone can look at that and say that the internet falls within this transmission and reception of messages, impressions, pictures, signals, by way of all these other things. So if the RCA is denying that that falls under their purview as far as internet broadband, is there a reason? I mean, the definition seems to describe it, as your legal advisor says so as well. Seems to say that they should be covering broadband. Is there a reason? What's their stated reason for not? Are they saying that this doesn't define internet, or are they just saying we don't really want to be involved with that?
And Representative Will, we do have, members of the RCA
Even better, even better. Yeah, this could be directed to.
And we'll get to that in a minute.
I think we'll have
our questions for it. And I guess then I do have a couple of questions. So, Representative Guttenberg, you've made one change to the statute. And can you tell me, and I guess it's been a long week, and I you may have mentioned it earlier, but if you can clarify for me what this change actually does. What does this mean that the RCA will be doing now that it is not doing, and how is that going to help expand broadband internet?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So under the existing statute, under defining telecommunications, they're saying under this definition they don't have authority. Our legal team says that they do. This just says including broadband internet access. And the things that leaves to do are listed under in the FCC's ruling, which part of it is the net internet neutrality issue, is protecting consumers from fraud, business practices, enforcing fair business practice. These are just examples. Advertising, billing. Generally respond to consumer inquiries and complaints, right? And I would assume that we have language in the budget, which hopefully we're about to pass, that there's language about mapping, right? Who has coverage where?
So I guess are you anticipating that the RCA will field complaints against these entities even though they're not regulated by the RCA?
Well, the RCA will take it upon themselves what they normally do with everything else. I am not defining. I'm just defining that they're covering this, right? I'm not telling them.
I guess what I'm trying to understand is what are you wanting them to cover?
Well, for what I would like to see, and I don't know if they're going to take it upon themselves, but I would like to see examples of where the state could be more competitive, can make competition more productive. Mm-hmm. There is we are limited, very limited competition in this state. The amount of public money that comes into the ISP carriers now prevents a lot of competition from happening. So I'll give you an example. If I want to go out and start an internet business and run cable or fiber or whatever I wanted to do without any government money, just with the bank's money or my own money, I'm competing with somebody who's under the that gets right now universal service funds, and almost all carriers in the state get that. I'm competing with somebody that if I see a market there, they will see a market there, and they have public money to go out and do those things. So that's problematic. But there are places, I'm hoping, where competition can be promoted, where more people get internet, and sometimes it's just pointing it out. You know, here is where your providers are. Here is where they're not.
And I guess I'm trying to understand. Okay. Are you telling the RCA to do these things? And I guess I don't see that language in the bill. If we're telling them that they have the authority, I'm trying to understand how the bill as it's written right now will actually institute a change for RCA to regulate this industry. And then I guess I have some questions about, is this you mentioned something about regulating the industry is not really what you want to do, but if it's about trying to get mapping or if it's about trying to get competition, it doesn't seem to me like the RCA is a proactive organization. I don't understand how they, with their regulatory hat, would be able to go out and then be proactive to try and increase broadband when that hasn't been their role with respect to telephone or water sewer or anything else. So I guess I'm just trying to figure out how does this actually get to what you're saying you would like to do, and I'm not quite making that connection yet.
So the RCA, the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, has preempted regulation of this by the state. They've taken it upon themselves. Only they can do that. But there are other things that the RCA can do, and I'm just putting it on that. I'm just putting internet and broadband under their purview. They have. I would just go to them and say what they. I know they. We have a book. They issued a book because we had intent language in last year's budget to do a report on internet, on the gap in the state. And I don't have it with me, but it's about an inch thick. That they produced and gave to us in December, that delineates a lot of the problems in the state. And I would hope that through their efforts, some of those could be addressed, because nobody's addressing it now.
Yeah, follow a question from Representative Stoops.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'm confused because you're saying they have the authority to regulate it, and you're not specifying okay. Who they is and what it is, and so I'm having a hard time tracking you here.
Okay, if I may, Mr. Chair. Broadband is, and I'll use broadband and internet exchange interchangeably because we can do that. Broadband, the Federal Communication Commission says only the Federal Communications Commission can regulate broadband, and they have a hands-off policy on doing that now, part of the net neutrality. Outside of that, the RCA, which is the state entity, is prevented from regulating price controls and other things inside of Alaska. There's endless reading on these things, but outside of the limits that the Federal Communication Commission has put on what they can't do and what the RCA can't do and only what they can do, there are things that they can do for the state that nobody else is doing. That the RCA can do. Okay. And I'm hoping that the RCA picks up some of those issues, and they are the people that have a better understanding of what that is from their perspective. I know what I want to do, but every time I start talking about it, I go beyond what their scope is, limited by the FCC and the RCA.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for the bill sponsor? We do have members of the RCA available for questions, and I think I'll start with Rich Gazaway if you're still available. Mr. Gazaway, can you place your name and affiliation on the record? And I think we probably do have a few questions for you.
Understandable, Chairman. Yeah, I'm Rich Gazaway with the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. I also have Chairman McAlpine and David Parrish with me of our common carrier section.
Okay, thank you. So, Mr. Gazaway, I guess I'll start with a question, and I'm just kind of curious, seeing the bill being a relatively simple bill that just adds broadband to internet, from the RCA's perspective, what does that mean for what the RCA would be either eligible to do or prepared to do in respect to broadband internet?
I would say that I'm not sure. My understanding is we've never proclaimed that we have no jurisdiction over broadband altogether. I think maybe there have been individual commissioner statements on our public meetings to that effect. Where we struggle, though, is the federal government has precluded a lot of our activities in the internet market. And, for example, we can't have any rate regulation. We can't impose a RCC type mechanism, regulatory cost charge. And now under the net neutrality order, they've further limited those abilities so we can't require non-discriminatory access. The issue that I think has come to a head for Representative Gertenberg's perspective is we had an informational docket opened in response to legislation from last year, budget intent language, and we asked for information on broadband networks. And we were told by carriers that we didn't have the authority to ask for that information. Like a staff member, I was the one who presented the commissioner's recommendation that we did, that they focus on the service, we should be focusing on the network, and if there's any interstate traffic, because broadband is an interstate service. Telephone, voice can be interstate if the endpoints are within the state. And so any network that carries interstate services, we have jurisdiction over and can require the information. And that would include, and they're all one network nowadays, so that would allow us to gather mapping information. The commissioners did not push that issue. That's still kind of an open issue. So for that part of what Representative Gutenberg is requesting, I believe we feel the authority is there. I'm not sure what's the basis of the statements that we profess that we have no jurisdiction. I would say there's been a couple words where we have acknowledged that we have no rate jurisdiction, rate oversight.
Okay, thank you. And we've got a question from Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for being available this afternoon. I'm in possession of a legal services memorandum, February 18th, 2018. It says the legal services folks are being asked to provide draft a bill that would provide the RCA with regulatory authority over broadband. However, it goes on to state that the RCA will still not be able to regulate any area that is preempted by federal law, and further that any attempt by the RCA to reinstate the very rules or requirements that the FCC intends to preempt by the order would likely be unconstitutional. And I guess one of my concerns is you've got kind of an overriding federal management, if you will, of this interstate communication system, and I kind of worry about us, trying to, kind of carve ourselves out as a community. I don't know that we can, based on the legal opinion, but I'd be interested in your perspective on, I certainly don't want to do any damage. Through the chair, would you have an opinion on that?
Could you restate your question exactly? You're saying, do I agree with the legal opinion?
Well, basically, we have a number. I mean, I think there's probably half a dozen different broadband service providers in the state. I'm aware of at least three or four in Anchorage Bowl. Maybe there's more than that. But I'm concerned that if we start, I think competition is a good thing, and I guess I'm worried about trying to define Alaska as a kind of a different and unique market apart from the 49 other states, and I'm worried that we might compromise that level of competition by driving some of the smaller competitors out. But I don't know to what extent the RCA is actually involved in that or not.
Thank you for the clarification, Representative. I guess I should put some context on what I said earlier. When we talk about our domain, essentially, where we have jurisdictional oversight, it deals with basically the telecommunications industry, a local exchange and inter-exchange carriers, long-distance carriers. And when it comes to internet service providers that are not affiliated with those entities, we really have never played a role in oversight of those entities. We have only played a role in oversight over the entities that fall under our other telecommunications regulatory purview. And so I think that halfway answers your question. But when we've had these debates, it's been with regulated telecommunications industry, and it's because they are one of the larger internet service providers. And to go back to Representative Gutenberg's point earlier, they are subsidized while the other ISPs are not. And so what what I think he is in favor of is us looking at how to subsidize the other providers as well to make it a more competitive, a level of competitive playing field. That is not something we have done to date. We have administered broadband grants before. They were federally funded. We handed out the money, and there were performance expectations based on the receipt of money, but, you know, that was because it was a contractual arrangement. We did not make any proclamations regarding the commission's jurisdiction of the service absent the grant grants.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Bull.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I have two questions. The first one is, going just strictly by the definition of telecommunications that we have in front of us, that I sort of alluded to earlier, as far as defined as transmission and reception of messages, impressions, picture signals by means of electricity, electromagnetic waves, and so on, would you agree that the broadband or internet falls under that definition?
Well, again, I am staff, so my opinion isn't binding on the commission, I have to say. But, yes, I would agree with that.
Okay.
Follow-up? I'd also say, though, that to the extent but there are federal preemption issues at play that preclude any what our involvement can be.
And through the chair, Representative Wool, this is Stephen McAlpine. It has been stated by at least one commissioner has taken the position that we, from what I listened to her, it sounds like she's saying that we are totally preempted. That particular commissioner's term is very soon to be up, but she has an opinion about it. Other people have a different opinion. By putting that in statute, you can only clarify that which might cause some doubt.
Thank you. And one quick follow-up. Thank you, commissioners. Voice over internet protocol, which I guess, as we've heard in previous meetings on other issues, is sort of the standard way telephone communications are done, and correct me if that's not correct, but would voice over internet protocol, which you guys do regulate, is that in any way attached to broadband or internet?
Well, through the chair, Representative, we don't regulate VoIP, voice over internet protocol. We can impose RCC payment expectations on it, but it's kind of an open question that the federal government hasn't addressed. Some states have pursued some jurisdiction over, a couple of states have pursued jurisdiction over VoIP, but they've been appealed, and those appeals are pending. Most states have taken a hands-off approach to VoIP service. It's considered it's very akin to a regulated voice service, so that's why some states believe they have authority over it, but the FCC has never really came out with a proclamation to that effect, and in one way or the other, to be honest with you.
Thank you, Mr. Gasway. Any other questions for the RCA? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Gasway. Thank you, Mr. Alpine, for your participation. At this time, I will open up public testimony for 17 p.m., and I do not have anyone signed up for public testimony. I do have other people signed up for questions as well, and I guess what we will do at this time is set House Bill 384 aside. Representative Guttenberg, you have a comment?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. In your packet is a document that looks like this from NCSL, and it lists all the other states that do something with broadband. Develop infrastructure, support grants to expand out internet. And in the 2008 broadband task force report, and every other report that's done on broadband, whether it's the Arctic Council, says there needs to be an entity in some capacity that facilitates a state need. Alaska has none. In here, I'm just opening up to Florida, creates the Rural Infrastructure Fund, which includes broadband. You just go through it and talks about all the things they're doing. Alaska has a universal service fund. Whenever you look at your phone bill, there's a one from the FCC and one from the state. Theoretically, those funds could use to build out grants for where the state could point out where there's a need. They could fund them that way. They could point out systems that need more more competition, but we would not be alone. just on this first page, you have Alabama, Arizona, and Arkansas. There's no Alaska on there. It has most of the states on here that are doing something. We, with our great geographic challenge, with distances and lack of infrastructure, have to do something for the people of the state of Alaska to promote the public sector to build out to places where it is not in their business plan or a short-term business plan to get something done. I think we have an inherent public interest to see that done. I have no preference how it's done. It just needs to be done. But I encourage you to just go through this, just look and see what other states are doing. You'll see we are doing, unfortunately, we are doing nothing. We're just leaving it up to the ISPs, and they're doing what's best for them. Nobody's doing what's best for the state.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Guttenberg. And with that, we will set House Bill 384 aside, but we are planning on bringing that bill back before us tomorrow at our 3 o'clock meeting. At our 1 o'clock meeting tomorrow, Saturday, and I will finish that announcement when we're finished with our last bill. Thank you. Next bill up is a House Bill 230, Telecommunications and Internet Privacy, and we do have Representative Drummond's staff, Patrick Fitzgerald. Mr. Fitzgerald, if you can come forward, place your name and affiliation on the record, and provide us with your introduction of the bill.
Hello, Chairman Keto and members of the House Labor and Commerce Committee. I am Patrick Fitzgerald, staff to Representative Harriet Drummond, who may be joining us shortly. She's coming down from House Finance at the moment. We heard House Bill 230 last year, so if it pleases the committee, I will just go over a quick recap of what the bill does.
If you can, yes, refresh our memories, please.
Absolutely. House Bill 230 states that any collection and sales of private information by a telecommunication company without the individual's express consent will be deemed as unfair and deceptive trade practice and will allow the state to have the authority to pursue criminal or civil charges against the telecom communication companies who violate that agreement. The legislation was suggested by the Council of State Governments in lieu of the FCC rollback of the regulation that allowed civil action to be taken for violating the collection and sale of private information without the consent, the customer's consent. The legislation also specifies that telecom companies and ISPs, or Internet Service Providers, are not able to turn down service if someone is not willing to sign over access to their private information. We can field any questions that the committee has at this moment.
Thank you, Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, it's interesting, and you know, on the face of it, this seems rather straightforward. Again, through the chair, I'm reminded. I sat on an airplane one time next to a guy. It was a data guy for Safeway, and it was when they were in the process of acquiring Cars Foods in Alaska, and this was a dozen years ago. It was a long time ago, but at that time, I remember talking to them, and they basically kept track of by customer. If you're buying Wheaties or whatever you're buying in their store was a record, and I forget it was like in the terabytes. It was massive amounts of information, and I kind of asked, well, what do you do with that? And this was a long time ago, and they're kind of slicing and dicing the information. But I guess I'm, at some point, I guess when you talk about personal information, I mean, whether. If I buy a box of Wheaties from a merchant, I kind of expect that to be between me and the merchant, and I'm just trying to get a clarification, make sure there's no unintended consequences with this proposal here, and certainly it's timely since we've got the Facebook business with Cambridge Analytica and kind of what's out there. But that's the one concern I have is just that, is this something that's going on already? Are we kind of tying our shoelaces together here? I don't I'm not hard over on it one way or the other, but I'm a little concerned just about what's happening right now and what's a routine business practice.
Mm-hmm. Patrick Fitzgerald, through the chair, to Representative Birch. Thank you for the question. I want to put on record that we are not trying to accuse any Alaskan telecom companies or internet service providers of doing this. This is kind of an actionary step. With the FCC rollback that happened, we just want the state of Alaska to have a statute that there is civil repercussions for unlawful sale of private information if the ISP does do that. We don't have any instances of this happening directly as it relates to the bill. We just want something in place since there is no longer a federal law that states that.
Follow up.
Yeah, and I think to your point, it's an indication of there hasn't been a demonstrated problem that we've been made aware of that this would be really addressing. And I guess it strikes me that there's kind of a presumption of almost a presumption of guilt here before we move into this. And I know it's been we've had this in the queue for a year now, but I look forward to learning more. Thank you.
And before we go, I'd like the record to show that we were joined by Representative Josephson shortly after we gaveled in, so he's been here for most of the meeting. And we also have been joined by the bill sponsor, Representative Drummond. And Representative Drummond, did you want to place your name and affiliation on the record? Do you have any additional or any comments on the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your indulgence. I apologize being late. When it rains, it pours around here when bills start moving. I am Representative Harriet Drummond. I represent Spinard and Midtown Anchorage in the state legislature, and I need to catch up on what my staffer has presented to you.
Okay, thank you. And Representative Wohl has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I imagine I was here in May of last year and saw this bill. I don't fully recall, but I guess my question is, this says that ISPs can't sell your information to anyone without your consent. And I just wonder if this is going to be like when you go on the internet at a public place or even in this building or airports or whatever, and you go to log on the internet, and before it'll let you on, you have to click on this little box that says, I agree. And it's several paragraphs or more of something. And everyone just clicks on it because they want to get on the internet. And I don't know what it is I'm even agreeing to. And all these sort of internet I agree clicks, I do it because I want to get on, whether it's on the airplane to watch a movie or so on and so forth. I agree.
In the legislature.
Yeah, in this building, too. If you use the public Wi-Fi in this building, the first thing it gives you a page that you have to click, I agree. So maybe I'm agreeing that whatever ISP I'm using can use my data. I don't think I am, and I'm probably not. But if that's what this bill is going to require that the ISPs do and everyone disagrees, and add to the fact that if I go to Facebook or some other of a million different sites or apps, they're going to grab my data, perhaps not even ask me, perhaps 50 million people weren't asked recently, and sell it to someone else who then might sell to someone else. So I appreciate the intent. I just wonder, is it how it's going to play out?
Go ahead. Patrick Fitzgerald, through the chair, to Representative Wohl. Essentially, ISPs pertain to internet service providers, so this would be when you sign up to have internet in your house, in your office, wherever, you enter into a contract with whatever internet service provider that you get into the contract with. What this bill does is essentially if they are found to be pulling your information, collecting your information, and selling it without your consent or checking a box, then this allows for civil recourse from that. It's not necessarily something that you would be also on the internet, like clicking, I accept the terms and conditions, and then moving on from the internet. It's more of a contractual thing that you would have setting the internet up. If that helps, I think that helps with your question, yes.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That does help. So what you're saying is if I go to GCI and say I want to get internet in my house, I'll have a contract, probably paper, might be online, I don't know. And I would one time say, don't sell my information without my consent. I'd submit it, and then 6 months later, let's say they get some great deal from Facebook and says, we want to buy your data, they'd have to then ask for my consent. I can't really imagine that happening, but, and if I don't consent, I don't know what the recourse would be. And does this happen? Are they currently, does my ISP now sell my data? And is that what these complaints are? There was 7% of the 450 consumer complaints were related to that. Is that what they are? Because those people thought that their data was being sold?
I would, Patrick Fitzgerald through the chair to Representative Wool, as far as that 7% figure, I would rather defer to the ACLU, and I might be able to follow up with that later. I'm not at the place where I can answer. However, this was legislation that was suggested by the Council of State Governments because of the federal rollback. As I stated earlier in this hearing, we are not trying to point any fingers and say that this is happening or we are out to kind of essentially get the internet service providers in Alaska, but we do want the FCC, what the FCC would be considered statute to that was rolled back and eliminated to be put into Alaska state law, so that there is protections if your internet was being, or if your data, if your personal information was being sold by the internet service provider, that you would be able to have civil discourse from that.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And when you say what the FCC is rolling back, do you mean the net neutrality aspect of that hasn't, I guess it goes into effect April or so, I think this month, next month is from what I understand. But is that where you're, so this is like preemptive in a sense based on what the FCC just did, even though last May they hadn't done it yet, but this is preemptive, anticipating a more of a Wild West in the internet world.
If I might, through the chair, Representative Wool, Representative Drummond, this bill doesn't have anything to do with net neutrality. That's a whole different issue. In this building, we have a couple of networks. There is a secure network, which all of our computers in our offices are logged onto by IT. Then there's the public network that you talked about. The little screen rolls down, and you read several paragraphs, if you so choose, and then you check the box at the bottom, and you're on. But there's a private network that if you ask IT very nicely, they will give you a password. They will set you up with a password for your other devices that are not legislative, state-owned devices. It's almost like we need an organization chart here to see what we're talking about in terms of access to the internet. I pay GCI for access to the internet in my apartment here in Juneau, and I'm not sure who provides the internet to this building. Somebody, probably GCI, I couldn't tell you. But beyond that, I don't think Alaska would have a lot of pull with, say, Facebook or any of those other large organizations, which the feds are currently struggling with. This is at the business-to-business and resident-to-business level, in which we are controlling what they do with the data that we pay them to access. In order to get onto the information highway, we pay them. And I know in my house, I pay probably the equivalent of efficiency apartment worth of telecom costs each month, from cable TV to wire to internet to telephones. And for our mobile phones, it adds up to a pretty picture, as I'm sure all of you know what that looks like in your households. And we're just trying to get our internet service providers to treat us fairly and with respect, and from the perspective of Alaska's really good privacy laws, we need to extend that to our online explorations.
And I guess I will follow up on that. Representative Drummond, you indicate that you want to have Internet providers treat us with respect. Are they not treating us with respect now?
I think this is preemptive in case they decide that they do want to do something. I think we have to have this in place to protect our constituents.
Okay, and I do have a question regarding the bill specifically. There's a penalty section. Can you let me know what the penalty is for violation of this provision that you're wanting to put into law?
I may, Patrick Fitzgerald, through the chair, I may need to check back on this, but it was my understanding that the penalties would be determined by whichever department this were to be regulated under.
And I guess there is a section that refers to a violation. I don't have that information in front of me. I guess that's why I was asking you for what does that refer to, Section 3 of the bill? And is there a range of penalties associated with that violation?
The Patrick Fitzgerald, through the chair, the Alaska Statute 45.48.800.
Correct.
I don't have it. I would have to go through my notes. I'm sorry, and I would be happy to follow up with you, Chairman Kuhn.
If you can get that information to the committee, that would be appreciated.
Absolutely.
Any other questions for Bill Sponsor? We do have the Department of Law available online for questions. Do we have any questions for Department of Law? I do have public testimony still open. I don't have anyone signed up for public testimony. I will close public testimony at this time. That brings the bill back before the committee. Is there any additional discussion on House Bill 230? Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't support this this legislation. I think, I'm not sure where the respect thing comes from, but I think we've got a competitive market out there. I know there's a number of service providers, certainly in my community, that I have access to. I think we've got testimony here from a number of different folks regarding the current internet privacy protections that are exist as far as records and record keeping. From the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, Electronic Communication Privacy Act, Children Online Privacy Act. I think there's a lot of concern and kind of emotion around this. I'm not convinced that it's a problem that really needs and demands the time of energy, the amount of time and energy that we're addressing here. I just don't see it as a problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Even though we saw this in May, either I wasn't here, I don't remember it. So I'm not necessarily against the intent. I just kind of feel like I want to find out a little more information about it. I don't know if you were trying to pass it out today or not.
We can certainly hold it for another meeting.
That would be my preference at this point.
Okay. So I think what we'll do at this point, it seems since we have had a fair amount of time between our first hearing and our second, we will set this bill aside. Our next meeting, we will intend to move it, but we would have any other questions and perhaps the information from Mr. Fitzgerald, then we can take committee action on the bill. So at this time, we'll set the bill aside. We do have a meeting scheduled for tomorrow. We are trying to clear our docket, and we do have quite a few things going on. So we will be looking at House Bill 262, Military Spouse Courtesy License, at first hearing, bringing forward House Bill 374 on bill financing of energy improvements. We heard that one last week. It'll be a second hearing. House Bill 384, Regulatory Commission of Alaska Broadband Internet, also second hearing. And then House Bill 401, Insurance Reinsurance Valuation Credits, the Department bill, will be here for a second hearing. We do have an updated committee substitute that will be presented by the department. And if it is the will of the committee, I would also like to consider moving House Bill 401 forward. With no other business to come before House Labor and Commerce, we stand adjourned at 4:38 p.m. Thank you.